Passage 16. Questions 51 to 53 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 16.
It was long ago noticed that different plants open and close at different times of the day. In fact, in the 19th century, they used to make gardens in the shape of a clock face, with different flowers opening at different times. It was possible to tell the time just by looking at this flower clock. No one really understands why flowers open and close like this at particular times. But recently, some interesting experiments have been done. In one, flowers were put in a laboratory in constant darkness. One might predict that these flowers, not having any information about the time of day, would not open as they usually do. But, in fact, they continue to open as if they were in a normal garden. This suggests that they have some mysterious ways of keeping time, that they have, in other words, a kind of biological clock. It has recently been found that not just flowers, but all living things, including men, have cycles of activity. Because these cycles last about 24 hours, they are called circadian cycles. Circa equals about, dien equals day. Some scientists believe these cycles are controlled by an internal clock. According to this theory, the flowers in the laboratory open because their internal clock tells them to do so. Passage 17. Questions 54 to 57 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 17.
Do you want to know something about the history of weather? Don't look at the sky. Don't look for old weather reports. Looking at tree rings is more important. Correct reports date back only one century, but some trees can provide an exact record of the weather even further back. It is natural that a tree would grow best in a climate with plenty of sunlight and rainfall. It is also expected that little sunlight or rainfall would limit the growth of a tree. The change from a favorable to an unfavorable climate can be determined by reading the pattern of rings in a tree trunk. To find out the weather of 10 years ago, count the rings of a tree trunk from the outside to the inside. If the rings are close together, then the climate was bad for the tree. Studying tree rings is important not only for the history of weather, but also for the history of man. In a region of New Mexico, you can find only sand, no trees, and no people. However, many centuries ago, a large population lived there. They left suddenly. Why? A scientist studied patterns of dead tree rings that had grown there. He decided that the people had to leave because they had cut down all the trees. Trees were necessary to make fires and building. So, after the people destroyed the trees, they had to move. In this instance, studying tree rings uncovered an exciting fact about the history of men. Passage 18. Questions 58 to 60 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 18.
China Entertainment Television and Broadcast Limited, CETV, forged a strategic alliance with AOL Time Warner, the world's largest media company, on February 17th. Under this alliance, CETV will go through a complete makeover to provide entertainment programs of the highest quality to Chinese audiences around the world, especially to those in China's mainland. Chen Yongguang, general manager of CETV, said, "After the makeover, CETV will provide a host of great programs, including our own productions and programs purchased from the world's best entertainment networks. We will make sure that our viewers get the latest and hottest entertainment shows in the world." AOL Time Warner, CETV's strategic partner, is the world's leading media company and the first in the world to introduce digital broadcast technology in the transmission of information and entertainment programming. AOL Time Warner has been famous for its television production facilities and a wealth of programming resources and talented performers. The new CETV programming will present the Chinese worldwide a wide variety of entertainment programs, including talk shows, music, arts, fashion, science, health, movies, soap operas, etc. CETV, with headquarters in Hong Kong, was established in March 1995. CETV features a 24-hour Mandarin language channel transmitted through satellite. CETV has a huge audience consisting of 43 million people, with 33 million in Asia and 10 million in mainland China. Passage 19. Questions 61 to 63 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 19.
In many places in the world today, the poor are getting poorer, while the rich are getting richer. And the programs of developing planning and foreign aid appear to be unable to reverse this trend. Nearly all the developing countries have a modern part, where the patterns of living and working are similar to those in developed countries. But they also have a non-modern part, where the patterns of living and working are not only unsatisfactory, but in many cases, they are even getting worse. What is the typical condition of the poor in developing countries? Their work opportunities are so limited that they cannot work their way out of their situation. They are underemployed or totally unemployed. Some of them have land, but often too little land. Many have no land, and no prospect of ever getting any. There is no home for them in the rural areas, and so they drift into the big cities. But there is no work for them in the big cities either, and of course, no housing. All the same, they flock into the cities because their chances of finding some work appear to be greater there than in the villages. Rural unemployment then becomes urban unemployment. Passage 20. Questions 64 to 67 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 20.
Today we will continue our examination of the growth of the consumer protection cause in this country with the beginning of federal government regulation of the food industry. As you will recall, after the Civil War, powerful business interests had developed monopolies known as trusts. These trusts, as a result of their monopoly position in their industries, had little regard of the welfare of their consumers. The first step in consumer protection came in 1906 in the food sector. In that year, a sensational novel titled The Jungle was written by an activist named Upton Sinclair for the purpose of exposing the horrific lives of workers in one such trust, the Chicago meatpacking industry. In his book, Sinclair described in vivid detail the unsanitary practices of the large slaughter and packing houses at that time. The unintended effect of the book was to move the public to protest against the tainted food products that they were being sold. As a result, President Teddy Roosevelt formed a special investigating commission to investigate the conditions described in the novel. The commission's report was even more sickening than the novel, telling about dead rats, splinters, rope ends, etc., that were swept up and sold as potted ham. As a result of the report and angry public, the president pushed the Meat Inspection Act through Congress. It required federal inspection from the start of processing to shipment of the prepared meat for sale over state lines. A further act intended to prevent the intermixing and/or mislabeling of foods and drugs, known as the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, was also passed. Next week, we will continue this examination of the consumer protection cause up to Ralph Nader's entrance onto the scene as a powerful consumer advocate. Passage 21. Questions 68 to 70 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 21.
In the 18th century, French economists protested the excessive regulation of business by the government. Their motto was laissez-faire. Laissez-faire means letting the people do as they choose. In the economic sense, this means that while the government should be responsible for things like maintaining peace and protecting property rights, it should not interfere with private business. It shouldn't create regulations that might hinder business growth, nor should it be responsible for providing subsidies to help. In other words, government should take a hands-off approach to business. For a while in the United States, laissez-faire was a popular doctrine, but things quickly changed. After the Civil War, politicians rarely opposed the government's generous support of business owners. They were only too glad to support government land grants and loans to railroad owners, for example. Their regulations kept tariffs high, and that helped protect American industrialists against foreign competition. Ironically, in the late 19th century, a lot of people believe that the laissez-faire policy was responsible for the country's industrial growth. It was generally assumed that because business owners did not have a lot of external restrictions placed on them by the government, they could pursue their own interests, and this was what made them so successful. But in fact, many of these individuals would not have been able to meet their objectives if not for government support. Passage 22. Questions 71 to 74 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 22.
Even a careful motorist may have the misfortune to commit a motoring offense. In due course, having received a summons, he will appear in what is commonly known as a police court. This is a court presided over by a magistrate, who tries cases without a jury. A magistrate has powers to pass sentence for relatively minor offenses only. Serious charges are dealt with by a judge and jury. A magistrate's court is also used for the conduct of preliminary inquiries to determine whether or not an accused person shall appear for trial in a higher court. When his case comes up in court, the motorist hears his name called by the clerk of the court and comes forward to identify himself. The magistrate then calls for the policeman who charged the offender and asks him to give evidence. The policeman also is expected to give an account of what happened when the offense was committed and to mention any special circumstances. For instance, the offense may have been partly due to the foolishness of another motorist. It would be unwise for the accused motorist to exaggerate this. It will not help his case to try to blame someone else for his own mistake. The magistrate, on hearing that some other motorist is involved, will doubtless say, "What is being done about this man?" Case coming up later this afternoon may well be the answer. If you are guilty, it is of course wise to plead guilty and apologize for committing the offense and taking up the court's time. Passage 23. Questions 75 to 77 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 23.
A team of scientists recently began a project to measure the effects of loud noises on sea animals. If the sounds don't harm the animals, then the researchers can go ahead with a plan to transmit sound waves through the Pacific Ocean to take Earth's temperature. Sound travels faster through warm water than cold water. By analyzing the speed of sound through the ocean over time, the scientists will be able to determine if our planet is warming up. The experiment was nearly cancelled more than a year ago because environmental groups fear that the sound will confuse or harm the sea animals. So, scientists are conducting tests on the animals first. The researchers lowered a loudspeaker that emits low-frequency sound about 1,000 meters beneath the ocean. Scientists at the site transmit sound waves into the ocean. Radio transmitters attached to some of the sea animals help the researchers keep track of the animals' movements. If sea animals are distressed by the sounds, they would swim away from the speakers. So far, there aren't any signs that the animals are being harmed. Researchers at the site noticed that large numbers of sea animals swim near the speaker, whether it was turned on or off. But it is still too soon to know for sure, the scientists admit. The test will continue through September. If all goes well, they say, we can begin measuring temperature changes on our planet.
Passage 24. Questions 78 to 80 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 24.
I am Mr. Britton, the head librarian. Today, I'd like to introduce you the facilities in our university library and show you how to use them. The first room on our tour is the reference room, where you will find all sorts of reference materials, dictionaries, bibliographies, literature guides, and even telephone books. You may use these books only in the reference room itself. The next room is the periodicals room, where you will find various newspapers, magazines, and academic journals. The current issues are usually directly available to you on the shelves. And you can get an older issue by filling out a slip from the librarian. These items must also be used in this room. The next contains the card catalogs. All the library's books are listed here by title, by author, and by topic. When you are looking for a book, you must write the book's number, title, and author on these slips, and present them with your library card at the desk. The books themselves are kept in the stacks, which are open only to graduate students, faculty members, and library staff. Our library has over 1 million volumes in these stacks, which cover 5 floors. If you have any further questions about using the library, I'd be glad to help you after the tour. Thank you for your attention. Passage 25. Questions 81 to 83 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 25.
A community theater is an important part of almost every city or town in the United States. There are over 2,000 community theaters in the United States today. About 4.5 million people work or perform in these theaters for an audience of more than 50 million people annually. These theaters are amateur organizations and are different from professional theater companies. A community theater may have its own building or perform in a school or church hall. The actors and actresses do not receive money for their work in the community theater. They have other jobs to support themselves instead. Small communities can't support a full-time theater. They cannot pay actors, directors, or stage workers, so the theater participants work for free. One purpose of community theater is to provide an opportunity for creative work. Many people join in community theaters because they want to perform or to be creative. Several people in a community theater group were asked why they join. Each one said he or she needed to be creative, to do something original. One man said, "I love to act. It's the only time I feel alive." Another said, "I have a very boring job. In the play, I can create something." One woman said, "My whole life is occupied by my husband and family. I need something more than that." Another purpose of community theater is to educate and improve the community. Theater is an art that also introduces new ideas to the audience. Passage 26. Questions 84 to 87 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 26.
I hope you all enjoyed your visit to Capitol Hill. If you look back behind you, you can get an excellent look at the Capitol building, with its beautiful dome and the Statue of Freedom on top. I forgot to mention that the design for the original building was chosen by George Washington himself back in the 1790s. That building was opened in 1800, but it was burned down by the British during the War of 1812, and it had to be completely rebuilt. Well, to continue our tour, ladies and gentlemen, we're now traveling west on Madison Drive. Our next stop will be the Washington Monument, 555 feet high and dedicated to George Washington, our first president. In the meantime, if you'll look out of the windows on the right, we're just passing the National Gallery, which houses an extensive collection of European and American art from the 13th to the 20th centuries. By the way, this park-like area that we're traveling along is called the Mall. It extends from the Capitol to the Washington Monument. Across the Mall, on the left, is the National Air and Space Museum, which exhibits on aviation history and the space age. If you have time, I highly recommend you to visit the Air and Space Museum for a fascinating look at the history of air and space travel. If you look straight ahead now, folks, you'll see the Washington Monument. The monument, an obelisk that stands 555 feet high, was finished in 1884. We'll be stopping there shortly, and those of you who wish will be able to take photographs from the observation level 500 feet up. There is an elevator to take you there, and it's safe. All right, everyone, here we are. We'll be staying here approximately 20 minutes. For those of you who do take the elevator up to the top, if you look directly north, you'll be able to get an excellent view of our next stop, the White House, the home of all our presidents since the second president, John Adams. Okay. Remember to take all your personal belongings as you get off the bus. We'll meet back here in 20 minutes. Passage 27. Questions 88 to 90 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 27.
The Decade for Natural Disaster Reduction is a program designed to reduce the impact of natural disasters throughout the world. With support from the United Nations, countries will be encouraged to share information about disaster reduction. For instance, information about how to plan for and cope with hurricanes, earthquakes, and other natural disasters. One of the most important things the program plans to do is to remind us of what we can do to protect ourselves. For example, we can pack a suitcase with flashlights, a radio, food, drinking water, and some tools. This safety kit may help us survive a disaster until help arrives. Besides, the program will encourage governments to establish building standards, emergency response plans, and training programs. These measures can help to limit the destruction by natural disasters. The comparatively mild effects of the Northern California earthquake in 1989 are good evidence that we do have the technology to prevent vast destruction. The recent disasters, on the other hand, prove that people will suffer if we don't use that technology. When a highway collapsed in Northern California, people were killed in their cars. The highway was not built according to today's strict standards to resist earthquakes. Individuals and governments have to be far-sighted. We should take extra time and spend extra money to build disaster safety into our lives. Although such a program can't hold back the winds or stop earthquakes, it can save people's lives and homes. Passage 28. Questions 91 to 94 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 28.
Before a new airliner goes into service, every part of it is tested again and again. But there are two tests that are more important than all the others. One of them is very strange, and the other is very dangerous. The first of these is called the tank test. A modern airliner must fly at very high altitudes. Air must be pumped into the plane so that the passengers can breathe. The metal structure of the plane has to be very strong for this reason. When the plane is filled with air, the air presses against the skin of the plane. The pressure on a small window, for example, is like a huge, giant foot that is trying to get out. If a small part of the plane were to crack, the plane would explode in the sky. This is what happened to the first comets. In order to test the structure of the plane, it is lowered into a huge tank of water. Then it is filled with air. The pressure inside the plane is greater than it ever will be when it is in the air. Finally, there is an explosion. This doesn't cause so much damage inside the water tank as it would anywhere else. Engineers can discover which part of the plane cracked. This part is made stronger. The most dangerous test happens when the new plane goes through test flights in the air. The test pilot must find out exactly what happens when the engines are shut off suddenly. He takes the plane up very high. Then he shuts the engines off. The plane begins to fall like a stone. It is the pilot's job to find out how he can get control of the plane again. These two tests are examples of how planes are made safe before they ever carry passengers. Passage 29. Questions 95 to 97 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 29.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've commenced our descent in the Sydney Airport and will depart outside the terminal building about 30 minutes from now. For those of you visiting the city for the first time, I have some information for you. The distance from the airport to the center of Sydney is approximately 10 kilometers. Taxis are available. You'll find taxis right outside the terminal building. The cost of a taxi trip to the city is about 12 Australian dollars. There is the coach service available, and the cost of the journey to the city and major hotels is $6 for adults and $2.50 for children. There is also the open yellow bus number 300 to the city at a cost of $3 for adults or $1.50 for the children. Banking facilities are available outside the customs hall. Hotel booking facilities can be found at the Traveler's Information Service. I'd like to remind you when you leave Sydney Airport on the next international flight, you'll be required to pay a departure tax of $10. Thank you. Passage 30. Questions 98 to 100 are based on the following passage. At the end of the passage, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the passage. Passage 30.
The people of Davis, California, have succeeded in cutting their energy consumption by one-third since 1973. The first energy-saving action was taken in the early 70s. It was the legislation of street building codes. All new houses in Davis must have the proper insulation so that heat will not escape during the winter. New houses must also face north or south so that they will not be overheated by the sun in summer. The law definitely has had effect. Since 1976, there has been a 50% saving in the amount of natural gas and electricity used in heating and air conditioning. There are other energy-saving features about Davis. Buses, particularly supported by the city, transport university students throughout the area. There are 24 miles of bicycle paths, and today, there are twice as many bicycles as cars in the city. By reducing the available parking space, the city council has succeeded in reducing the number of cars in the city every day. Another benefit of the reduced parking space is the greater number of small cars. People are saving gas because they are choosing not to drive, or because they are driving fuel-economic cars. Davis, California, has become an energy-saving model for other cities.